Welcome to Excuse My ADHD, a podcast for adults with or who think they may have ADHD. I'm your host, Jeanette, and this is my journey.
Let's talk about how on your videos, the whole reason I've reached out to you was you had a TikTok and it was talking about how people with ADHD complement neurotypicals and neurotypicals kind of complement us. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I think the one you're referring to is the one where I'm either on the roof or on the ground and the accommodation of both.
Yeah, I think so.
Big surprise there. It's funny how I filmed that. It was like this portion of the roof, this portion of the roof. Let's just do one video at each level. That's just unbelievable. But I'm going to just set the whole thing. I think we complement each other because I think that what we struggle with, neurotypicals do well and vice versa. I mean, that's why I think we complement each other well.
What do you think that neurotypicals complement us with probably the most?
The things that ultimately don't matter in life, the daily tasks that literally are just very mundane that you do sometimes need to get done, but we're just never going to do. And so if you know a neurotypical, they're going to help you, you know, put the laundry detergent in the cup and then put it in the thing and then hit start. Whereas honestly, for my ADHD, I couldn't give two shits about that. Like I literally could not care less, but then they're the ones that come to us when it's like, I really made a mistake. I need your help or I need your advice on this. Or when it comes to the life altering situations, that's where we thrive.
Right.
So they can help us with the small things and we'll save the world and help them do it as well in the meantime.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, I think sometimes it's so great because I have time blindness, obviously.
Right.
Big deal. My mom, when I was growing up, there was not one clock in the house that was the same time.
Oh my God.
Not
oh
one.
Oh my God. That's the same as my mother and my wife. Actually.
Oh my God. But it was like, we never knew what time it was.
Yeah.
But the problem was she started off and everything was always 30 minutes ahead of when she had to do so, go leave the house or whatever.
Right.
But then I think she got used to that and was automatically doing the math in her head. So it wasn't effective anymore.
Right.
And then, so then my dad started changing some of the other clocks.
That's literally exactly. Mine was 10 minutes ahead. My mom set it for 10 minutes ahead inside, but then we get in her car. She would take.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm like, but no, because that one in there said this.
Yes.
So there's no way that it was 1:10. Now it's 1 o'clock. Like, take me to the psychotherapist right now. Like take me to the psychiatrist. Like, because right now I'm freaking out.
Okay. Oh my God. And for the longest time after I moved out, I couldn't function because all our clocks were right. And I was late everywhere. I didn't know how to, I couldn't, because I'm still thinking that it's 30 minutes ahead or 15 minutes ahead or 45 minutes ahead. And it took me so long to deprogram that.
Oh, I know. Well, because I think that, I mean, on a not serious level, but a semi-serious level, like we're really bad at the right and really great at the wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's got to be mixed, you know, in there together. It's like, if it's 10 minutes ahead, then your car better say 10 minutes ahead. Your phone better say 10 minutes ahead.
Yeah. Like it has to all match. And it's like, here, take all of my things, computer, watch, phone, make them an arbitrary number of time fast and don't tell me.
Right. Yeah.
That's the only way that works.
Right. 100%.
Because otherwise you're doing the math in your head all the time.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
I'm terrible at math. So that's really where I struggle.
Yeah. Well, I have dyscalculia. So that's kind of, I know you said dyslexia, but that's kind of like with math. So it's like formulas and speed. My mom has a nickname. We call her Barbara Andretti. She can get through. She can get through the state of Georgia in 3 hours.
Barbara Andretti.
Yes. And unfortunately, I take after her with the lead foot because it's so weird. It's like I can't judge speed, how fast I'm going. And it's like if I'm used to going, say, 70 miles an hour, and then when we moved to Philly, the interstate was 55.
Yeah.
That difference, it was like I felt like I was going 15 miles an hour.
Right.
But then after getting used to that and coming back here and then going 70 again, it was like, holy crap.
But that's why we all have so many speeding tickets, probably.
Oh, my God.
There's speed limits that go 70, 50, 30. It's like, well, wait, you didn't give me enough warning.
And then they wait. They wait for you.
15 signs on the way to that 30 miles an hour that's like 70 miles an hour. 69 miles an hour, 68 miles an hour, six, and then it's possible that we get there.
Right. Well, you and I were talking about speeding.
Yeah.
Do you ever get, I guess they call it highway hypnosis. When you're driving for so long on a route that you go every day that you like, you don't remember how you got to where you're at.
So I don't forget how I got to where I was at, but I will say that as the years have, so I'm 41 and I've done the same hour commute for 15, 17 years. Each year that gets a little harder.
Yeah.
And at first it was an incredible break from like, I drive into work. That gives me time to wake up. That gives my time, my brain time to get engaged. So that like the second I get there, I attack what I need to attack. Mm-hmm. Then I leave. And then when I leave, it's okay, shift gears, work, shift gears, wife, you know, or social activities or whatever. And so that helped. But now it's getting to the point where like, it's become a lot more difficult. I'm getting a little bit of blurred vision. Like I've done it so often that it's panic inducing sometimes.
Oh, it is. It's absolutely panic inducing. I mean, there would be times where I remember getting off on the exit and then all of a sudden I'm at my exit to get off 20 miles down the road.
Yeah.
And I don't remember anything that I saw. I couldn't tell you any cars. Yeah. I couldn't tell you anything. And it would absolutely induce a mini panic attack.
I think maybe as a non-doctor again, for everyone listening, I am not a psychiatrist. I am not a doctor. Do not sue me. But I think a lot of it is the fact that because it's become so normal for you that you can't do it.
Yeah.
It's not new. It's not changing every day. It's the same thing every day.
It was for the longest time.
Completely shut down.
Yeah. Well, you're not thinking about it. And it's like on that strip of interstate, it was never stop and go traffic. It was just always go.
Right.
There's nothing to worry about. It was just a good 20 miles of nothing.
And at first, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Until your brain absorbs it and gets used to it. And then
it's like it goes on autopilot.
Well, this is boring again. Let's go the opposite direction. Let's go fucking 500 miles this time instead so that I can think.
Oh, yeah, I've passed up my exit before. Luckily, the next exit down just takes me right to it. But I have done that before, too.
It can be very difficult. It can be very difficult driving, especially.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But then I guess, when you're talking about complimenting, that is something that neurotypicals do better.
Right. That's why at this point, I used to love driving. But now it's like, let's take your car instead of. Because it's nice just to be a passenger. And recently it was bridges are getting to me recently.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me breathe so heavy. I start sweating, but it never was a problem. Like I'm on the water all the time. Yeah. I go out on the boat. I love wakeboarding. Like water is, I'm not scared of heights. But if I'm driving over a bridge now, that produces something that I have never experienced.
Yeah.
Which is like this traumatic thing. Like I'm just like, oh my God. And I have to stay so focused on the road. It drives me crazy. Like,
oh yeah. In where I'm at by Cincinnati, I go over the bridge every day.
Yeah.
Every day I go to work, and there's multiple bridges. So some days I take different bridges depending on how traffic is.
Right.
And there's one, I think they call it the Singing Bridge or something, but it's a metal graded bridge. And when you're driving on it, it feels like you're on an oil slick because your car doesn't stay straight. It kind of does like this wavy thing all the way across the bridge.
Yeah.
And it's like my white knuckle grip on the steering wheel the whole way across it. And then there's the main one. And that one is almost always bumper to bumper. And especially when I'm coming home from work and I'm just like the whole time in my head, please get me off this bridge. Get me off the bridge. I need to get off the bridge. Get out of my way. Yeah. I need to get off the bridge right now. And it's not been, like you said, until maybe within the last 2-3 years.
So that's interesting because we're similar in age. Like, why is it now?
I don't know. It's weird.
Isn't it?
I don't know if it's like a mortality thing or if it's because, well, for me, it's probably because there was a big fire on that bridge and it's gotten worse. And they talk about how dangerous it is all the time, but the fire exploded and the bridge was shut down for a while. And it's like, well, is it safe? I don't know. And then I see, you know, in Philadelphia, a bridge I used to drive on, that one fell apart. And it's just, I envision the bridge collapsing and all of the cars. Yeah. And I'm thinking, can I get out? Do I need to roll the window down? Can I go out the sunroof? What's the quickest way to get out?
Right. Because we're thinking, well, and actually that can be a good thing, because if something were to happen, you've already planned it out in your mind to get through it. Like, and that's, and that absolutely, I do that, but all of the time, bungee jumping, skydiving, I'm great. Don't put me fucking on a bridge driving. If I'm the passenger, I'm fine. Like, I'm absolutely fine.
Yeah. Same.
But I don't know what that is. Like,
I don't either, because if my husband's driving,
down, it's like,
I don't know. If my husband's driving, it's the same thing. I'm fine. I don't care.
100%.
But if I'm driving, get me off this damn bridge.
So weird. That's
That's
so incredible that you experienced that.
Oh my God. Maybe it's because we're in our 40s. Who knows?
Yeah. It's the midlife crisis.
Right.
We just need to buy a private jet. Oh, wait. Those cost a lot of money. I would like one of those. That'd be nice just to be able to have. But unfortunately, unless you win a scratch off, it's probably not going to happen.
No, was it like 9 billion or something at one point, one of the lottos? I forget. But yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, driving, I think driving is something they compliment us on. I think, but like you were saying, something that we compliment them on. And I think it said something about this the last time I talked to you, that we keep like this childlike innocence and that we, I guess, kind of find the joy in life a whole lot easier.
We find the joy in life, but we're also, and I think actually that was something that you complimented to what I said, which was great. is the childlike innocence. But to me, it's the perspective of the world, at whole. It is the way that we can read people so easily and know what's going on in their life before they even say anything.
Yeah.
And then we have to go through that process of nothing's wrong with me, nothing's wrong with me, nothing's wrong with me. And it's like, I know that there is. Like, I know I can see it based on your body language. Finally, they will open up. And when they do, we're able to help them in ways that they've never been helped before.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, ultimately is what matters in life, is helping each other.
Absolutely. That's exactly why I'm here. And I think that's why you're here, right? Too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my why. That's why I do any of this.
Right.
I mean, it's great for me because it's cathartic, but then it's also helping somebody else out there feel less alone.
Yeah. And the why for people like you and I is we come up with that why.
Mm-hmm.
It is not dictated to us.
Right.
Neurotypicals, it is dictated. Well, why are you going to school? Because this person said it. I had to get this grade. Well, why are you in this job? Because my dad said I had to do this.
Yeah.
And we can't understand that. so that when someone's looking to break out of their shell, who is the first group of people that can help them do that?
Oh, God. And I think we're sometimes the biggest cheerleaders. And
oh, yeah.
Biggest time. And we push the hardest, too, because then we come up with all these ideas for their idea.
Yeah.
And ways to go about it. And it's just like, we get so excited and so into it. And it's not even something that's ours, but it's for them.
It's authentic.
Yeah.
Because it's authentic care. And the one thing that neurotypicals can read is authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I think that when they know that you are genuinely trying to help because you really care instead of caring because caring works or they're paying you money, yeah. You actually give a shit. They can see that. And that's what makes great CEOs. That's what makes great leaders.
Is well, and it builds trust.
Yes.
It builds trust.
Right. And so, again, chalk that up as another quality that we have.
Well, yeah, because I mean, you have to have that with your team too, wherever you work.
And if absolutely,
and I feel like that's probably been one of my biggest strengths as a manager is being able to read people, know when they're having a hard time, help them, and then get them excited about whatever they're doing.
Right.
And them know that they can always come to me with anything. I mean, who wants to have a 2-hour meeting? Nobody wants to have a 2-hour meeting.
No.
But every week we had 2-hour or longer meetings because we genuinely enjoyed being around each other and we worked together and we would talk about things. And then everybody would be sitting there on their computer doing their own thing and we'd be bullshitting and talking about Game of Thrones or whatever the hell at the time.
Exactly.
And then we'd be like, okay, where are we going to lunch? I mean, well,
it's because they viewed you as a person and not a boss. Right. That is the whole key to being a good manager.
Mm-hmm. And your team works harder for you than that.
Oh, they do. Because they're working for you and your care for them. They're not working for the money.
The powers that be or the money or whatever.
Right. Right.
They're working for you because they know they can trust you, that you 100%. Have their back and aren't going to throw them under their bus and that they're going to stand up for you.
Yeah. And
you're going to stand up for them. Yeah.
Right. And the freedom to do it their way, which is
because we want the freedom to do it our way.
Right. So that's how this complements.
Exactly. And I think that is just something that's so special.
Yeah, it is. It is extremely special, actually.
Because I mean, I could never, ever be a micromanager. And I can't understand that. People that are that way.
Me neither. Half the reason is because I don't want to do that actual work that they know how to do better than me. Like, I don't want to show up and look like a dumbass because I've given them the freedom for so long that they know how to do it better than me.
Oh,
that's great. You want these people to be better at you than you are yourself, or it doesn't work.
That's the biggest thing.
Right.
I get so much joy of seeing people that I've worked with and that I've mentored
and taught. Incredible.
Do good and even exceed what I taught them and what I'm doing. It makes me it's like a proud mother hen.
It is. It absolutely is. You want them to skyrocket so far past you because we genuinely want that for them. It's not that we think that's going to promote us to something. Fuck no. We're doing it because we care about that person.
Yep.
Again, what other quality could you possibly want in a manager than that?
That's kind of like the ideal manager I've always been looking for. I've had pretty close to that a couple times.
Yeah.
And
I've got it. And that's why I haven't left. I've had the same one for 18 years or whatever it's been. So that's why I'm saying
it makes all the difference, though.
It does. It's everything.
Because, I mean, weren't you saying that they give you the freedom to kind of do whatever you want to do, how you do
Well, it's not like whatever you, it's just
Well, more, within the job.
Right. Within it's basically creating my own schedule that can change. So,
it's
have
flexible.
A schedule. Right. As long as I send that email or I update and say, this is what this week is looking like for me, there's no issue.
See, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's like, by the way, I'll be in the office 3 days this week. Maximum, because there's nothing going on, you know, whatnot, and it's okay, cool, thanks for keeping me updated, that's it. And so you've got to respond. That's also another thing he does exceptionally well, is he responds to the emails that I send. Because yeah. if I send him something and then he doesn't get back with me within 3 hours, I'm thinking, oh shit, was this not okay?
Oh, I know, right?
That's where managers...
rejection sensitivity yes, euphoria kicking in too.
Yep. And that's exactly what I laid out for him too. And I said, just a simple okay or a thumbs up or whatever is fine. But acknowledge that you received it so my brain doesn't go 50 different directions and I can't focus on what I need to. He has done it every single time.
That's amazing.
It is. It absolutely is. So, yeah. So, again, he's got me for life.
And see, that's where you get that loyalty.
Right.
If our employers, I feel like if employers would just get that.
I know.
We can't fit into their... You can't fit our square peg into the round hole.
Right.
And that we needed the flexibility to do things the way we work.
Yeah.
We would be so much more productive for them.
Oh my God. Yes.
Because I feel like we work so hard because we've had to always work so hard to prove ourselves because we're always told we're lazy or not living up to our potential. That we overcompensate sometimes.
Yeah.
But if you give us the flexibility to do it our way, it just, we can shine.
We'll exceed what you ever thought we were capable of.
Yeah. Just give us the chance.
In my opinion.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it doesn't have to be something that's set in stone. Make it a trial run.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they should do that at schools too.
Oh God, yes. That would be extremely nice. I mean, I think go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I don't know what I was going to say now.
See, that was my fault.
That's fine. I'm sorry.
I think our life is a series of trial runs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is.
I mean, it is. But the thing is, if you're going from one trial to the next, you are absorbing everything that you are doing during those trials and you're getting better each time. Mm-hmm. So each time you're starting a different trial, you're starting from a higher level than you were before.
Yep.
So if you want your employee to constantly be improving trial after trial after trial after trial, that's what's going to work. Not sit down, shut up, do this.
And then have a talk at the end of the year about how bad your performance is. And then now you're on a PIP, you're on a performance improvement plan that actually does not help.
No, it's actually the most detrimental thing because they'll just either quit, not show up, or get really mad and make a big mistake for you and the company that's going to fall on you, the manager, instead of that employee.
Absolutely, yeah.
So.
Just got to be careful.
Out there. Yeah. I'm sorry, careful. Is that a four-letter word? Wait, hold on.
I don't know.
I love it.
But yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of some of the other ways. But like you said, you were talking about just day-to-day tasks. I think it is nice to have the neurotypical help with reminders. But then at the same time, I think there has to be some communication because those can be misconstrued.
It's the presentation of it, I think.
Yeah.
Reminders are great, but too many, is it a detriment? I mean, if you're just sending like a list every 5 minutes or every 10 minutes, that's never going to fucking work. Like that will never work.
Mm-mm.
What will work is how you present it. And my wife actually does an exceptional job of this sometimes. But she does an exceptional job in saying, do you feel you might be able to do X sometime this week?
Yeah.
Not do you feel or not this needs to be done today?
Yeah, that just automatically makes me say I don't want to do it.
Right. Because it's a dictation instead of leaving it open to our interpretation of when we're going to feel like doing it. And if you do it like that, odds are because you phrase it like that, we're going to do it that second because then it's going to be in the back of our minds. You know, we don't want it in the back of our minds anymore. We want to focus on what we're doing. The best way to get the most out of us immediately is to say, do you feel like you might be able to?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I don't know what kills me, though, is like once I start doing tasks, if I haven't had my medication or if I haven't had enough sleep, It gets into that hole. Oh, it's such a big downward spiral. It's so bad. Yes. It's like I'll start cleaning the bathroom and somehow I'm in the basement flipping channels on the TV looking for something because I heard a song when I was in the living room cleaning something up while I was supposed to be doing dishes, but also supposed to be in the laundry room.
Right. Like, right.
It's like right. It's like the dominoes fall and I've been in every room of the house and got nothing done.
Again, it goes back to that. Do you feel like you might be able to? Because maybe we could shift that a little bit. Adjustment. Here's a trial run. Let's go through a trial run here. Sometimes someone will say, all we need to do today or this week is this, or all I need you to do is this this week. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that gets to me and sometimes it doesn't. If I see the word all in a text message, I'm like, okay, well, that's all right. If that's it, then I'm not doing the dishwasher and I'm not doing the other room and it's just the bathroom.
Yeah.
I don't need to be flipping the channels or whatnot, trying to figure out the next thing to do to impress and go above and beyond, which we want to do. So the reason that all those things happen is because it's like, okay, well, I got the bathroom done, but oh, I want them to be really impressed now. I want them to be really impressed. So why don't I start doing this and then I'll flip the TV on and then I'll.
Or I'll start putting laundry up in the closet and see, oh, I don't have enough hangers. So I need to go through my clothes. So now I need to make a Goodwill run. So I need to get through the kids' clothes so they can have their Goodwill run. And then it's like.
The one at a time thing is almost
impossible. It's like it should have been something that only took 5 minutes and then it becomes like 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yes. That's the whole thing of. That's the whole take your car thing that when my wife wants to you know, and God bless her, it's she just wants to, you know, vacuum my car. But here's the thing. It's not just I pull my car up and you vacuum it. Okay, that's not what happens here. What happens is I have to spend 2 hours cleaning it so that you don't judge me for how dirty it is when you are cleaning it. So this is where things get dicey.
Oh my God, it's not just
doing that. So now, and then I'm sitting there just, oh, please, 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 no, please, please don't judge me on how bad that is. So what takes 10 minutes in everyone else's mind is a 4 hour process in ours. I mean, just simply going to the grocery store. Oh, let's take your truck. No. Well, why is that? Well, because now I have to stop working because I have to clean it for 2 hours. Then this 30 minutes to the grocery store. Then the grocery store, whatever you bring out of that, is not going to fit in the car because I threw everything in the back and then placed a sheet over it, the same color as my internal.
You can't see it.
As my interior? Right. It's like, how did your seats raise 5 feet in the back overnight? Well, it's because getting the trash bag and the trash cans and all that was too much. I just needed to cover it up so that I could just get through this half day.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Right. But it shouldn't be a half day. Yeah. It should be 30 minutes. And that's a struggle because now.
Yeah, but grocery shopping's hard.
Oh, absolutely it is. Okay. I mean, I just sit in the car. Like, I can't. It makes me panic attack, same as a bridge.
Grocery shopping kills me. Especially Kroger is our grocery store.
Oh, that's too big. That's too big of a building to be in. No,
they just moved everything.
Oh, my God.
They moved everything. And I hadn't been in forever. And I went in because during the pandemic, I got so used to ordering my groceries, which is the best thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
The best thing ever. And I've been going in and I can't put my groceries in order of the aisles that they're in because I don't know where they are anymore. And it's taking me 5 times as long because I have to backtrack.
Right.
Because things aren't where I remember them being anymore. And then I'm missing things on my list, even though I'm looking right at it on my list, marking things out. I'm still forgetting things.
Have you ever taken a screenshot or a picture of your list and then set it as your background on the phone so that every time you look at your phone, you see that list, which actually can help because for me, at least it helps because it's, I'm not going to go into my phone, into the notes part or into the previous text messages. That's too many steps. I just want you hit the button and the screen comes up.
I've not done that, but I have notes pinned into a widget. that helps.
I don't even know what a widget is, but yes, I'm very non-technology. Okay. So I was like, screenshot.
Okay. That makes sense though, because then your lock screen. So every time you click your button, there it is. Exactly. Right there staring at you.
Exactly. And then the goal is to like, I want the picture that used to be there to come up instead of this list. So what do? I go through the list so that I can. I can't put up that last picture until that's done. Can we go back to the car situation?
Oh, for sure.
So this actually has a pretty decent point, I think, is when neurotypicals and when you're in a relationship with someone with ADHD, if they're focused on something and they're working on it, and then all of a sudden it's okay, in 2 hours, can we go to the grocery store? Can we do this at some point? Yes, we can, but now I have to stop what I was doing and then go clean the truck so that you can get in it, so that then we can go and then the judgment and all that kind of stuff. By the time we're done with the grocery store, I'm going to be so tired. I'm not going to return to what I was doing. And that, what if what I was doing was another thing on your list that you wanted me to do? Now it's going to be, why didn't you get that done? It's because the distraction of the next thing. And they say that we go off into different tangents. We're actually the most focused. We focus more than anyone else in the world.
Oh, yeah. We get that hyper focus. We get that's the, all and we can over. Do. And then right? The problem is if you interrupt us, that's the problem.
Done.
Because that one thing that we were trying to do that you wanted us to do, we're not going to do it because you interrupted us and we can't get that energy back. Right. It's just zapped, gone.
Exactly. And that's another 4-day delay.
Yeah.
And so I can see it from their side of being like, okay, I just don't understand why they can't do this. Well, my thing is like, we can't half-ass anything.
No. And I think that's the problem is they don't understand how our brain processes that. Like correct. For me to clean the car, it's going to be like in the house. I'm going to get started. I'm going to tell myself I'm just going to take the garbage out. That's all I'm going to do is clean the garbage out. But once I get the garbage out, I can see all the crumbs in the cup holders.
Yeah.
And then I can see the dust on the dashboard.
Yeah.
And then there's a smudge on the window. So I've got to clean the glass and then I've got to do all the interior. But now the interior looks amazing, but the exterior looks like crap. There's bird poop on it and bug guts. And so now that has to be done too. And then the wheels have to be done because they have to be shiny like the rest of the car. And it is. It's that's
whole can,
a full day.
Whole can per tire.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's the full day.
Yeah. See, and that. So then why didn't you take the dishes or take the trash out or do the dishes? Well, because you wanted me to get the car done. So like.
And in order to get the car done, I had to do all these other things.
Right. Exactly. Meanwhile, if we're working from home or if we're working on anything that we financially are making money on, that shit's fucked now too.
Oh, everything's fucked.
Right. Everything's fucked. Everything is fucked from here on out.
Yeah.
When it's the criticism is we can't focus and we can't, or it is a lack of, how did Dr. Barclay put it? It is a, oh gosh, what did he say that was so brilliant?
It's
not a lack of focus. It is a perseveration, basically.
Yeah.
You cannot do the things you know you need to do. I think that's what he said.
Because he's saying it's like, we know what we need to do.
Right.
We're not stupid. We have the knowledge. We know what to do.
Right.
We just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the one thing that he says that I'm like, I don't disagree with it, but I also don't fully agree with it either. Because if we know what we need to do and we prioritize the job first, all the outside world sees is us not doing what we know we need to do when we are doing what we know we need to do. But then the outside world distracts us and it never gets done.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, but the problem is you can't just say, by the way, don't interrupt me. Don't ask me to do this. You know, you can't say that to someone you love. You can't say that to a friend or a partner or whoever. But the problem is that's what's really helped me is that I do say that.
Well, I mean, it's like, I think I was telling you, when my husband goes out of town.
Oh, it's over.
I get so much crap done.
Yeah.
And it's not because I can't do it when he's here. It's just that. So I don't know if you know who Brendan Mahan is and his wall of awful.
I think you
do. So he has this thing where all of the things from growing up, all of the bad situations, all of the times you've been told, all of the shame bricks that you've built up have made this wall, and that's why you can't do the thing.
Right.
And you can go around it, you can go over it, but that doesn't solve the problem. The thing is still there.
Right.
And I think that wall of shame is what keeps me from being able to do all of the things that I do when he's gone, when he's here. Yeah. Because I'm embarrassed and I'm shameful, and it's nothing that he's done. It's just over my lifetime, all of these things, anytime someone has criticized me for anything, it all sits there.
It's momentum is probably the most important thing with ADHD, I think. Mm-hmm. And when that momentum is in the opposite direction, mm-hmm. to the negative, for example, just like we were just talking about, is cleaning the car or going to the grocery store. Now, what if that spirals into the next day? And then you're harped on more for why you didn't get that thing done that they interrupted us from doing. So then you say, all right, well, I'm going to power through this. I'm going to power through this. And you try to do that every day until you're giving less energy every day towards giving a shit about anything.
Yeah.
That is where it becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't say
that's when it becomes depression.
Right.
Because that's what depression is.
Exactly. And you wouldn't say to someone, would you ever say to someone like, you know, I really understand, you know, that having to clean the car right now could really be bad for you later. Like, is anyone going to ever say that?
No, because it's hard unless you have ADHD or you understand because you've been there. It's hard to fathom how our brains work because right. they're so different. The neurotypical has to do something. They can just do it. It's like right. a button pushed and they do it.
Yeah. And they're not worried about you know, because they don't let the trash in the car pile up. This is a good analogy, I think, because it's not about the car. It's about the distraction that was imposed. Yeah. We didn't get up from the desk when we were working really hard. You asked us to.
Mm-hmm.
So next, for anyone listening out there, if you have a severely ADHD spouse, friend, anything, please try to understand that if they are excited about something or working hard towards something, don't ask them to do anything else.
Give them the grace to get done what they're doing and then ask them.
Yeah. Unless it's an emergency.
Yeah.
And then we're automatically the best ever. So we'll drop whatever we're
doing. That's okay. If it's an emergency.
We'll go save somebody's life. It's no big shit. Yeah,
whatever. Because that'll give us that boost that we need to get back to it anyway.
Exactly. The whole saving people's lives, like shit, that's putting dishes in a dishwasher for y'all. Mm-hmm. Like that's, right. that's easy.
Which is so crazy how our brains work that way.
Isn't that remarkable? And that's just the most fascinating thing to me.
I almost feel like MacGyver. Do you know who MacGyver is? I'm sure you do. Okay.
Hell yeah.
A lot of people probably don't even know they had the reboot, but I feel like MacGyver had to have ADHD.
Oh yeah.
With all of the crap that he could do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he had to.
It's like one of those people you put, give them a spoon and put them out in the forest and they build a fucking shopping mall.
Right. What can you do with a rubber band, a paper clip, and a pencil?
Yeah, God, how good was that? I'm going to go back and watch that, actually, now that you say that. I loved that show.
Oh, I used to love that show.
Phenomenal.
Oh, it was.
So,
to see all the things that he would do with, nothing. It's like, oh, my God, does that actually work?
Yeah, yeah.
Can I do that?
Nowadays, they'd probably have to have a disclaimer. This will not work. This is for entertainment purposes only. It's like, well, now I'm done. If it won't work out.
Like, if you're telling me it's not real, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm done. I'm right. not invested anymore. It had to be some hope.
Exactly. One sliver.
I know, right? Like, if I'm out, or like E.T. with the, what was that toy? Crap, I forget what it was. Where he would, and then he made the whole device to call home.
Right. The E.T. phone home.
I don't remember what that thing was.
But he phoned. I mean, he did
it. Oh, yeah.
Shit. It's just, then all those people came in and distracted him. So now all of a sudden we're in a situation.
And and the next thing you know, he's drunk. And
he's laying
around in his house robe because they told him he couldn't. See, E.T. had ADHD too.
No shit. Now, if Adderall had been prevalent back then, he'd have built the rocket ships.
He would have gone straight home. Minutes. Right.
Yeah. He'd have been like, I don't need to do the bike thing over the moon.
I mean, he wouldn't have been all about the Reese's pieces. He would have just been like, yeah, fuck the Reese's pieces.
I don't need to eat. Fuck them.
He wouldn't have been hungry.
I'm too busy. I'm not hungry. Leave me alone.
He would have been hyperposed. He'd been like, Elliot, who?
From cleaning the truck to E.T., this is the greatest conversation of all time. I love it.
What is the one piece of advice that you would give to somebody with ADHD?
Take a very, very hard look at what you are not good at. Very hard look. And ask yourself, is the thing or things that I'm really not good at ultimately what is important in life? Now take a look at what you're exceptional at. Is that something that ultimately matters or not? For example, if you are the most loving person you know, then you're the most loving. But if you suck at, you know, sticking to a schedule, buying, you know, or sticking to your planner, doing all those kind of things, that is not at the end of life what matters. And people are going to tell you, well, you didn't get this done. So, you know, you didn't graduate high school or you didn't graduate college. You didn't do any of these things. So now your whole life is fucked. You're going to be nothing. Well, here's my piece of advice to that is, yes, it is a lot more difficult in life to be, quote, successful or do what you want to do without those steps that neurotypicals do, the getting of the degrees, the all of that. However, the good news is that ADHD thrives on the hard.
And that's somebody telling you can't.
Right. Take some pride in that and in who you are.
Awesome. I love that. I love that. No, that's so true, though.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming. And it was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for listening to Excuse My ADHD. If you like what you hear, don't forget to please subscribe, rate, and leave an awesome review. Show notes and social media links are available at www.excusemyadhd.com. Until next time.